This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Cecily's looking over my shoulder yesterday while I was, or maybe it was Avery, actually, as I was getting ready to do the show.
Uh-huh.
I had Gertie, as I sent you guys the picture, Gertie's like on top of me, on top of my arm. I can't type. She's just like
a movable object.
Yeah, there's nothing
she was on
you
your
can do.
Heart. You know what I loved about that? Yeah. She was like right on your heart.
Well, that was more because she had kind of stuck her face into my armpit. That's uh-huh. where the warmest spot is. Uh-huh. And Frenchies are obsessed with warmth, so she was just like trying to go for the warmth. And you're right. At 14 pounds, maybe totally an immovable object. Nothing I can do. I couldn't even work. Then she left, and Avery was sitting next to me, and she looks over my shoulder and goes, "You're gonna have somebody on your show named Booger McFarland." I was like, "Yeah, that's exactly." What we're gonna do. So that's coming up 30 minutes from now at 8:30.
Wait, can we talk about
We got some stuff to talk about.
Michael
here.
Johnson, the sprinter?
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, not tweet.
Olympic sprinter.
Yeah.
What do we call it now?
I messaged
Post.
Him. Yeah.
You messaged Michael.
Yeah, you didn't
Johnson,
see that?
No.
Public.
Wow.
Yeah, I was curious
hey,
if he
what
had any advice
would you give to a 45-year-old not particularly in shape or tremendous athlete who needs to win a 200-meter race next Thursday against his coworker?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Has he responded yet?
Not yet. No. But I thought I would take a shot. I mean, he's the greatest 200 and 400 meter sprinter of all time.
Sure.
I thought I would take a shot, just see what he had to say.
Probably not, does he?
Do you think he knows what kind of advice to give someone that's not
I don't know.
A tremendous athlete like him?
More, unlike you, I'm willing to shoot my shot. Like, I don't have any fear here.
If
Michael Johnson has something to offer, the upright running style, perhaps, maybe he could have given me a little clue on how to pace yourself or what that should look like in a 200. Why wouldn't you ask the best of all time?
Well, I am eager to see what you find out.
I mean, he's only got like 100 and some odd thousand, 194,000 followers. So, I mean, like, it's possible he would see that and maybe get back to me.
So, speaking of taking a shot.
Speaking of advice.
And I know we're going to do Who's Shoes here in just a second. Yeah. But, Salk, I took a shot.
Yeah.
Between my wide space eyes. Yeah. This one hurts.
Yeah, my good buddy Carl, who's a golf pro. Yeah, sent me a message and said, "Brock is going to kill me if he uses that dumb analogy again. Drive for show, putt for dough.
Not true
based
anymore.
On reality or statistics at all.
It's what? Not really true anymore.
Scotty won the Masters because of strokes gained tee to green, not his putting.
Right.
And then like the face over the hand over the face emoji.
It is sort of true. Like in this day and age, like if it was all about putting now, like what's the guy from Canada? He'd be like number one. Like the
really
Brock, how do you feel about
really?
That?
Yeah, it's not really about putting anymore.
Gosh, that hurts.
Now at the pro level, by the way, I don't know if that's entirely true at the amateur level.
Mm. Sure. Did you see this question floating around on Twitter yesterday of would you win the Masters if you got to start every hole on the green?
No,
I still wouldn't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think I would. Yeah,
not close.
You know how many times you could putt off the green from on the green at the Masters?
Terrible.
Having played Pasatiempo, which is another Alistair McKenzie course, like, yeah, I don't think you'd have a chance. I think these guys would smoke you.
Well, let me just say to Carl, yeah. I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot, and I will not use that analogy anymore.
Good
it's
to
done.
Hear. All right.
And if I do, then you can just hit me right between my eyes again.
Right now, let's hit you with a little Who's Shoes.
All right, Brock came up with this.
Yeah, these are all Brock's questions
today.
Do you want to ask them, Brock?
No, what do you think? Were you down with it?
Haven't even looked at them yet.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Can't wait.
First up, Who's Shoes, Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick?
Ooh, this is good. This is even better based on our pre-show conversation we had. Whose shoes would you rather be in? Pete or Bill's? Now, Pete's got some bunions, right? That's why he wears those Nike Monarch size 14s. So... I mean, that's part of it.
I mean, I'd certainly like to look like Pete. I mean, if that's what we're talking about, I'd physically like to be in Pete's shoes.
Yes.
Everything looks good on Pete. He's in incredible shape. I mean, like, and he's going to until the day dies.
But Bill's now still wearing cutoff hoodies. He's on the field. He's doing a draft show with Pat McAfee. What?
Are we going to see the other side of Bill?
I think I'd rather be in Pete Carroll's shoes. he just seems a little bit more at ease with where he's at. And Bill's getting torched now, right? There's a Seth Wickersham article. Yes. I saw our guy Evan Cohen this morning on Sportsmanlike saying, oh, they had Damian Woody on, and this is going to, you know, prompt all the old Belichick guys to go to bat for him like Woody. Mm. And some of that is true, but all those guys are from the beginning. No one is taking any umbrage with Bill
Stephon
at the beginning.
Gilmore was sticking up for him last week, saying that Apple documentary. A lot of people think Kraft, that was kind of a hit job.
Oh, I didn't know that part. I thought it was just the old guys who were doing it. Oh, okay. Well,
I'm gonna go Pete. And you know, I taped a podcast yesterday. It was super, super fun with Jeff Foxworthy, and we talked a lot about identity. Pete seems to be in a place, and I know it's hard right now. It's got to be so hard, still living here and his son coaching in Washington and everything else. But he seems to be, Pete has football in just the perfect spot. He loves it, but it doesn't define him. And I think for Bill, and I think he's going through the interview process, you hear all that, like, it's all he has. It's all he knows. All he knows. And I think for Pete, there's a whole lot more. In fact, being a great grandpa, which I think he's doing right now. So I'm going to go Pete as well.
All right, this one, Schneider's 23 war room Nikes or his soon-to-be 24 Nikes?
You want to be in John's shoes in last year's war room or John's shoes in this year's war room?
Okay, a long way of asking that.
It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to read. You want to be in...
Oh, the shoes!
The shoes?
It's got to be the shoes!
Yeah. Do you want to be in his shoes in last year's war room with Pete in the number 5 and 20 pick, or do you want to be in his shoes this year with 16 and Mike McDonald?
I'd like to be in last year's war room. I'd like to have the number 5, the number 20, and 2 picks in the second round.
I think John
is... By the way, I might handle them a little differently.
I think John is...
Certainly the second round.
...been invigorated by this. By all this being on him. Right? Being it from a leadership position and everything else, and there is just so much more on his plate. And I think he's going to enjoy this one because it's also going to play right to his strength, manipulating this trade market. So I'm going to go actually, whose shoes? I'm going to go the 24 war.
That's nuts. That's your worst take. I mean, I love you. That's a bad take.
Thanks.
I do. I love you dearly. That's,
you know how
you'd rather have the 16th pick, no third rounder, no second rounder, and one third rounder than having 4 picks in the first 2 rounds, including the 5th overall pick. Are you crazy?
From a, harder.
From a team build, it was awesome last year. There's no question about it.
Night and day. Not even a conversation. This one's not even a conversation.
But there was a lot of conversation. Do you remember last year's war room? Do you remember all of the debate?
Yeah.
And I'm sure even in the building, and I know this in the building, there was great debate and great friction. Well, this receiver or that receiver? Well, a dominant defensive lineman with maturity issues,
right,
or a, you know, an
maybe,
elite.
Maybe you could have fixed the guard issue in the second round last year, and then you wouldn't have to be dealing with some of the problems you are now. I mean, like, there's a lot of different things you could have done.
Sure.
But give me 4 picks in the first 2 rounds over 1 in the first 2 rounds. Pretty easy.
All right, next up, Jonathan Classe or Luke Raley?
Whose shoes would I rather be in? I mean, Classe is moving real fast.
Real fast.
Did you see him score from second yesterday? Whew. He was scooting.
Did you see him cut third base?
Yeah. Whew. He just like, he you know, Divish can say all he wants about the long strides and their importance. He cut them to very, very short strides. He looked like Keith Byers coming around the corner there.
I'm going to go Classe here.
Heck yeah.
This opportunity, man. This opportunity, and you don't know how many you get. You really don't, as a pro. And this is quite a – this is going to be a month, as Divish kind of laid out with Dom Canzone, and that is a painful injury, and that's one of many that I know exactly what that feels like. And, yeah, I think for Raley comes in – you know, he was the one offseason addition, Salk, whose strikeout rate was extraordinarily high. That if you're going to be a kind of a contact team and you're going to go to some of this new plan, he was the kind of the outlier, like, oof. And he can't really hit lefties either. So if you're Class A, I just take advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, I think the Raley thing's a little overblown right now. I'm going to go with you as well, though. I'm going to say Class A just because of kind of the intriguing different types of skills. Mm-hmm. There are Luke Raley's out there. There aren't that many Class A's out there.
Yep.
But I will also say this. Raley kind of had a tough deal. Right. He comes out to start the year, and the only two guys in the entire lineup that are doing anything are Dominic Canzone and Mitch Haniger. True. So immediately those two guys start getting all of the playing time in left and right, which was not the original plan. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't play badly. No. He just didn't get an opportunity because right from the jump, those were your two best hitters. You had to keep them in the lineup.
Yeah, he did tell us, and the numbers do bear this out, Salk, and the challenge with the Dodgers is a part-time player wasn't very good. It was really hard. Yeah. Really hard to get in rhythm. It felt like he took a step last year because he got to play a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Give me Mr. Classe. Okay, that's it.
That's good. Those are good. Oh, the shoes.
It's gotta be the shoes.
I like your Rojas or Urias one. I'm gonna go with Urias though, just because the guy gets to go home to his Frenchie every night. Right. Poor Josh. I don't know who he goes home to, but it's not the Frenchie, and that can't be nearly as good. That is a little quick version of whose shoes. They're removable objects. Nothing you can do, Brock. They climb on you, and then you're stuck.
So they're heat seekers, huh? It goes right for the pit?
Yep, they go for your pit. They want to be... I mean, she gets in bed, and she crawls all the way to the bottom of the bed under the covers where she thinks it'll be warm.
Are you so confident that you're going to bring her out to the race next Thursday?
Oh,
you
want to
make sure she sees your
that
effort?
Might distract me.
I would be happy to bring her out, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to run with her. I think she'd slow me down a little bit, but I'd be happy to. The thing about a Frenchie is they'll run, but you never know when they might just all of a sudden stop for no reason. Like they're running. Oh, I'm going to stop. And they're like, okay, why did you stop? Are you looking at something? No. Just decided to stop for a moment. Okay, you ready to go? Yeah, sure, let's go. And then they'll start running again, but then they stop.
That feels like a patella or Achilles buster.
Yeah, they're sort of like Humpy. It's Humpy. They have a lot in common with Humpy the salmon. Okay, coming up, as I said, Booger McFarland to join us in 20. We'll give you everything you need to know, including the big change at the Seahawks facility next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
When you can go 7 straight starts and make sure that every one of them is a quality start, you're going to give your team a lot of opportunities to win. And the Mariners are 5-2 over that stretch. Unsurprisingly, yesterday it was Bryce Miller's turn.
Now the 2-2. Strike 3 called. He dots up a two-seamer, the lower outside edge. That's the 7th punch-out for Bryce Miller.
Yeah, he was really good yesterday, but he knows he's just part of this rotation. That's 3 great starts in a row for him, 7, as I said, for the whole group, and that's what they're supposed to do.
It's really cool. It's fun to watch. It's something that, like, we expected as a staff coming into this year. We know we have a lot of talent, like, in the starting rotation and in the bullpen, and anybody coming in out of the bullpen or anybody that's starting the game every day is going to be good and give us a chance to compete. And, you know, we've had a few hiccups here and there, which everybody does, but it's good to see us all putting it together and stringing a few good starts together.
It is really remarkable, Salk. We are spoiled. And when you watch these other teams and the staffs and everything else, like, nobody has this. Nobody does. Even when I asked, you know, passing the other day, is there anybody with 3, let alone 4? And obviously Wu is out, you know, having to watch all of this as he builds himself back up. Hancock will get the start tomorrow in Colorado, and we'll see, you know, what it's like pitching at, you know, a mile high and everything else. But golly, these guys are just no longer throwers. They've become elite difference-making pitchers. And all the tools that Logan has in his tool bag and all the movement that Kirby creates, well, Bryce Miller's now not a 1 or 2 or 3. I mean, he's got 4 different pitches. So when one's not feeling great, as he said yesterday, I wasn't even feeling that great with my stuff, but you got 4 different bullets to fire, golly, you become really dangerous. And yesterday, just a one-hit performance, just 2 base runners the entire day for a good Cincinnati Reds team.
Very good.
That just got swept right out of town.
Yeah, and then don't forget, you actually got your offense going a little bit as well. You only gave up 5 runs in the series, but you scored 17 over a 3-game stretch. They're going to need to do a whole lot more of that. Day off today. 3 in Colorado, as you mentioned, coming up. The Rockies are just 4-15. I thought Divish made a good point yesterday that I was thinking about, which is maybe another reason that Class A was the guy called up is because you're about to go to Colorado. And the idea of some of the defensive issues in the corner outfields they've had running around in that outfield, which is pretty big and the ball can roll forever. Yeah, it's not maybe a bad idea to have another pretty good athlete playing the outfield.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks spoke yesterday, and the guy who was certainly making the most noise is Leonard Williams, who was the first to tell us that a lot of the old pictures on the walls of the Pete Carroll Legion of Boom era, They're not there anymore.
And I remember the first day we came into the team meeting, Mike pointed out that, you know, there's empty walls in the hallways and things like that. And, you know, for a person like me, I think that made me really excited, and I hope it made the rest of the guys excited, because, you know, we're obviously going to respect tradition and the history of the Seahawks, but I think it's given us like a clean foundation to like create whatever we want to be. We're not chasing to like be like any other team that's been here before. We want to create our own identity.
I love that, man. They do have to. You can't just always be living up to Big Brother.
Mm-hmm. A week ago, it was Uchenna Nwosu's words that resonated the most. This week, it was Leonard Williams' words that resonate the most. I got a sense we're going to hear from these defensive guys a little bit more. You know, just and I think a young staff is going to call upon those veterans that have been there and done it before and done it at a pretty high level. Eventually, I'm sure we're going to hear from Jaron Reed and some of the, you know, some of the other guys. Devin Witherspoon spoke yesterday and talked about how excited he is. And this is all great, right? It's kind of like spring training. It's all the talk. It's all great. But ultimately, you got to go out and you got to produce. And you got to go out and you got to go play. And you got to go out and do create your own identity.
You know who always produced, at least whenever he was healthy? Rashad Penny. And he was in for a little look-see yesterday. Next. And the Seahawks should sign him and see if he can make his way onto this team.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Why would you be against that? I don't understand. What's the downside?
I would rather see Kenny McIntosh. I would rather see
George
Halani. I'd rather see a sixth or seventh or undrafted guy.
You'd rather see that than a guy who's had legitimate success in the NFL.
And who's been legitimately injury prone every single year.
You're not asking him to be your starter. You're no one's saying you're going to go bet the house on him. Like, maybe he's your third or fourth running back. Why wouldn't you want to bring in someone like that?
The injury luck they've had with running backs, he could end up being one that you have to use.
Great.
When was his last good year?
2 years ago.
We talked about his success.
The year before last year. Until he got hurt, he was great.
For 5 games.
And then he got hurt. I know. Bad luck. These things happen. Next. All right. Fine. All right. That's everything you need to know. 7:15 here on the Brock and Salk Show. I can't bring myself to play the Craig Doyle sound again. I'm done. It's too cringy. It's too traumatic. I can't. I can't play it again. You guys are going to have to just go find it. It's too much for anybody to listen to. All right. Did I mention that Troy Fautano is going to join us tomorrow? How cool is that? 8:30 tomorrow. I don't know whether the Seahawks are going to pick him, but he's like the most likely of anybody, don't you think?
He may or not be represented by the same agent that may or may not have represented Vita Vea, and there may or not have been some conversation about making sure, you know,
that he's awake.
8:30, we good.
And how do we feel about that?
I think we're solid.
Feel good. I mean, Roger Rosengarten. Did you know that my mom asks me about Roger Rosengarten like once a week? She loved that interview.
Did she really?
Yes. Now, I don't know if it's just because the name Rosengarten. I don't know what it is. That may have been part of what attracted my mom to the interview.
Right.
But she loves him.
Yeah.
Where's he going to get drafted? Is he a first rounder? Where's he going to go? He was so mature. I just loved him.
She loves Julio and Roger Rosengarten. Yes. They're so similar.
Yep. Yes. I know. Those are her two favorites, Julio and now Roger Rosengarten. So if Troy Fautano can be half the guest that Roger Rosengarten was, we'll be in for it tomorrow at 8:30. All right. Booger McFarland going to join us next. He loves the offensive linemen in this draft, and that includes Fautano. Is one of them coming here? We'll ask him that and more. Coming up next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports App.
Yeah, 1 week from tonight, the Seahawks getting ready to pick at number 16. Not the only thing going on next Thursday. Of course, Moore and I are going to be doing battle at a local track. We're still working out which one. Maybe at UW, might be in West Seattle. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Do you think we can sell tickets?
Huh?
Think we could sell tickets?
Why? Why would anybody pay to watch us run around a track? I don't think that makes a very...
You don't think so?
No. I don't think that makes a tremendous amount of sense. Let's chat with Booger McFarland instead. Booger, good morning. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here a week before the draft.
Well, first of all, I think I would pay a little money to see Brock run. I mean,
I'm not running. No, the last time I ran, I got a lot of Steven Seagal. Like, no, not doing that. No, Salk and our producer, Mora, are going to have a little run.
200 meters.
Yeah. Yeah. When was the last time Booger McFarland sprinted? I know you're a Peloton czar. I know you two are in great shape, but when was the last time you full on 100% stepped on the gas, full tilt sprint?
Oh, it's been at least 15 years, and that'll probably be the last time if I can help. But the only time I'm going to sprint now is if somebody says run, they're shooting, then that's the only time I'm going to take off running. Other than that, buddy, I'm going to give them a bike, and I'm going to ride my bike until the day the good Lord calls me home.
Love it. Love it.
Better on the knees.
Yep.
And no question. But, I mean, you know, Brock puts these nice suits on. He looks athletic. He's standing on the sideline. He's got the nice hair, and he's got the eyes, and he's well-dressed. But underneath there, I just wonder if they're still an athlete.
I wasn't sure, and then one day I worked out with Brock because I'd always made fun of him, like, oh, you know, backup quarterback, clipboard holder, ha-ha. And then one day I worked out with him, and I was like, oh, that's what a professional athlete's like. That's not just a regular schlub like me. That's a difference between the radio host and a professional athlete. So I don't know. I think he's still got a little something, Booger. I don't know.
Been a long time, but enough about me. Let's talk about
Let's talk more about you.
Talk about the real studs. They're going to get drafted in 7 days. And Booger, we were listening to some sound of you earlier in the week talking about these offense. We'll start with the offensive line. We'll get to the defensive lineman as well. But do you feel like in your years of covering these drafts that this is one of the deeper offensive lines and just groups overall that you've covered?
Yeah, no question. You know, there's usually always one or two guys where you say, okay, this is the guy I can come in and be a plug and play guy. I mean, there's upwards of, I think, at least six that are going to go in the first round, maybe eight. I mean, it is a deep offensive line class. It's kind of the pick of the flavor. You want left tackles, we can get Joe Alt and Olu Fashanu. If you want right tackles, you can get J.C. Latham and Talisi Fuaga. Like, there's so many different guys that you're looking for. If you're looking for projects, what about Amarius Mims, who might be the biggest project in the draft? However, all the traits are there. I mean, he's 6'8", I mean, 320 pounds, and he looks like he could play like tight end for somebody. I mean, that's how slender and athletic he looks. So this is the as deeper crop of tackles that I think we've seen. And I think if you're a team and you're unsure about a position that you need, I think you're going to see a lot of guys that just take the offensive tackle and say, I feel really good about getting one of the top players in this draft. Because if you think about it, think about this. If there are five quarterbacks that go in the first round and there are at least six receivers that are projected to go in the first round, so that's 11, and then you get 6 to 8 offensive tackles, I mean, that's upwards of 17 to 19 guys. It's only 32 picks in the first round. So then you throw in Brock Bowers, you throw in a couple of edge guys, and before you know it, the first round is done.
How do you judge linemen? What are you looking for in big people in 2024?
I think you have to be able to have athleticism and movement. No longer are you looking for guys that cannot move. You know the days of, well, he's a left tackle, he's a right tackle. Well, both tackles are important right now. Just look at what Philadelphia has done with their two stud tackles up there. And so you have to have two guys that can protect the passer, regardless of whether the quarterback left-handed or right-handed, like, it doesn't matter. I'm looking for arm length. I'm looking for athleticism. Can he bend? Can he move? Can he change directions? Like, you can't be a guy that can just go forward and not be able to hit the reverse and go side to side. And so I think those are the traits you look for. And then if you have a coach who's worth a grain of salt, he can teach whatever technique he wants. But you have to have the ingredients to be able to make whatever that coach is looking for. So those are some of the traits you look for.
Booger McFarland here with us from ESPN. You'll see him all over their draft coverage and all over all of their football coverage come the fall as well. Booger, what about on the interior? If those are the tackles, and then we've got a guy here in our backyard that is an amazing tackle, Troy Faltanu, that some are projecting could be an amazing guard as well. What do you feel about the interior offensive lineman in this draft?
You're right. Faltanu is a guy who most people are projecting him to go inside, just like they're projecting the guy from Duke, Graham Barton, to go inside. You got the kid from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson. You got the center from West Virginia and Zach Frazier. Like, those are the top guys that most people say that are going to go inside. And to me, those guys got to be nasty. Like, you talk about what you look for in a tackle. You're looking for that athleticism, that length, that movement. When I get guys inside down where I play, like, the traits are cool. And I want a guy that's kind of built like a block, but I need guys that are nasty, because ultimately sometimes you can't have the proper technique. You just got to move a man against his will. And in order to do that, you got to be a little nasty. So all those guys you and I mentioned, I think, are going to be some of the first guys to go off the board. You know, it's not necessarily a bumper crop for guards. Mm-hmm. You got, I think there are more centers in this draft. When you talk about, you know, JPJ, you talk about Frazier, Tanner Bordellini, some guys that could go inside. For Tanu, I think if you ask me who would be the top guard in the draft, you know, it's almost like when Zach Martin came out of Notre Dame. That's the comparison people always make, right? Or Brandon Scherff when he came out of Iowa. The guys that play tackle, that kicked inside the guard. You know, Zach Martin has had a Hall of Fame career. Brandon Scherff has been really good, made a lot of money. You can always fall back and put guys inside. I think it's tougher to find those tackles. That's why tackles go a little bit higher usually than the guards.
Okay, how nasty does it really get in there? Who are a couple of the guys that were the most nasty that you just hated or you despised or, frankly, you loved going against because you knew it was just going to be a brawl?
Yeah, man. I mean, a guy like Larry Allen. I caught Larry Allen toward the end of his career. Kevin Gogan, guys that were just nasty. Jari Edmonds with the Saints. LaCharles Bentley, who we used to go against all the time. Like, those are the guys that were just super nasty, man. Like, sometimes it doesn't matter, you know, what the play call. Literally, we would line up because we played the Saints so many times. Like, I knew their plays. They kind of knew what we were doing. So it came down to who was going to be the craftiest and the nastiest and get the job done. Those were the battles that I love, man, because there was no tricking each other. It was just, hey, we're going to line up and we're going to battle. And when the horn blows zero, we're going to shake hands. And I respect you. You respect me. The battle that I really enjoyed the most over my career was the center for the Bears, Olin Krutz, because he understood how difficult it was to play my position, and I understood how difficult it was to do what he did, because he used to always tell me, he said, I tell my offensive line coach every day, how the hell do you want this guy, who's a better athlete than me, to line up on my outside shoulder, and you want me to get in front of him on the opposite side? He said, it's impossible. It's almost like trying to outrun, you know, back in the day, Ben Johnson. Like you just can't do it. He was like, and I would battle with him on, and he would just tell me, yep, you got to get it done. Got to get it done. So, like, those were the battles, and I think that's my battle that when I look back on it, it's the one that I cherish the most. And he and I, every time we see each other, we kind of talk about that one.
Well, first of all, you couldn't outrun Ben Johnson. He was, you know, roided out of his mind. Second of all, I don't blame you for saying Olin Krutz. Based on the stories Brock has told me about Olin, if you don't say him, there's a decent chance he's going to track you down and fight you. So, like, I think you've done the right thing and just protected yourself moving forward.
Well, that's the nastiness that you got to have. I mean, Olin Krutz was one of the better centers that I ever played against. Now, you know, he's kind of fringe as far as being worthy of the Hall of Fame. But if you look at the guys that I played against, and I got Dermani at the end of his career. But as far as the guys that I played against, Stepnoski with the Cowboys, Olin Krutz, like, those guys were just and it didn't matter the body type. Like, Stepnoski wasn't a huge guy. He was probably 280, 290. But you talk about the athleticism and tenacity and the understanding leverage. He was amazing.
So tell me about Fautanu, who, you know, when we look through these mock drafts, there are about 1,000 of them. He's probably not been a majority of the mocks that have put him to Seattle, but probably a plurality. Mm. There have been more mocks that put him here than anybody else. Tell me what we should know about Troy Fautanu.
Well, I just think, first of all, just the tenacity in which he plays with. You know, I don't care about, I mean, yeah, he's big enough, the arm length, all that good stuff, but I just like his ability to be an athlete and to be nasty. You know, he's a guy that if you told me I could knock 15, 20 pounds off of him, he could play defensive tackle. Like, that's the kind of athleticism that he has. And you put that at guard, so you talk about the ability to move him in, to climb to the second level, to be nasty, to bring an attitude when he gets there. I think when you talk to some of the coaches around the league, that's the biggest thing that they say, man, this guy, not only does he have the traits, but he just plays nasty and with an attitude. And when you get that kind of guy, you know, we always hear about, hey, he's a tone setter. So what exactly does that mean? That means that's a guy that after the first play and the play is over, he's going to be the last guy that's pushing or hitting somebody. Like, he's going to set the tone of how we're going to play and what our team is going to look like that day. And you got to have that up front. If you don't have that on your offensive line, that's when your team gets called soft.
Yes. Yep, and that's been, I think, a challenge at times over the last 15 years here in Seattle. I don't know necessarily soft, but just consistent. Booger McFarland here, always consistent with us. Let's flip sides now to the other side of the line. Because, as you mentioned, there are going to be a bunch of QBs that go. There are going to be a bunch of tackles that go. There are going to be a bunch of receivers that go. I don't even know who the first defensive player is off of the board, but if Booger McFarland is picking the single best defensive player in this draft, who is he?
Leiatu Latu from UCLA. And I know about the medical, and I'm sure you guys know about that. Medically retired, the neck, has the surgery, comes back, has played the last 2 years at UCLA. But if you're asking me that, health withstanding, a guy that's going to make the biggest impact in the league, I think it's him, because I think he's NFL ready, meaning he understands pass rush, understands leverage, angles, how to use his hands. He's got some moves. He's not just an athlete running around a corner. I think his production is there. If you go back and look at his production at UCLA the last 2 years, and the tape stands out. And so I just don't know what teams are going to say, we're good with the neck. Mm-hmm. Because there's a reason he was medically retired. I'm sure you guys probably had a ton of conversation about this kid when he was up there.
Yeah.
But it's just some teams are going to be cool with it and some are not. And I think that's going to determine where he goes. I think Dallas Turner, the edge guy from Alabama, is going to be the first guy picked because he's got a clean bill of health. He ran 4.4. He's an edge guy. He's 6'3", 240, so he can play in space. He can rush. He can drop. He can cover. Like, he's what I call that hybrid, where football is going to. You know, there was a point in time, Brock, when you and I played where your defensive ends were 290. Mm-hmm. Defensive guys now that are setting the edge are 250, 260. Like, Myles Garrett is an outlier at 275, 280. Most of them look like T.J. Watt. They're long. They're slender. They can run. You can drop him if you need to. And I think Dallas Turner fits that mold. So I look for him. I don't think he gets past Atlanta at 8 because they haven't made a rush to passer since Chuck Smith left, I don't think. So they're definitely looking for pass rush.
How about Jared Verse?
Yeah, Verse is your quintessential power player, man. Maybe a little stiff, but who cares? The production is there. The production was there at Albany. It was there at Florida State. And, Brock, you'll love this comparison. Kind of reminds me of Cam Jordan, a guy that's going to, I think, be in the Hall of Fame. Mm. More of a power player, never going to run around you. But every year you look up, Cam Jordan has got 10 to 12 sacks, and he's played for, what, 12, 13 years? I think if I told you that Jared Verse would be that, I think everybody would line up to take him.
Okay, I got two last questions. Because defensive linemen, they know quarterbacks too, so – they're some of the best guys to talk about quarterbacks, honestly, because they can feel
really?
And they can sense.
We had Michael Bennett on. He just made fun of quarterbacks and said all they did was cry.
Well, Bennett was in his own world.
Okay.
He's still in his own world. I mean, you get, you know, someone like Boog that, you know, has a background studying them, watched them, feel. So if Michael Penix is sitting there, you taking Michael Penix in the first round?
You know, I think that he's going to be a first-round pick. Just depends on where I'm picking. If I'm in the top 10, though, I don't think he's a top 10 player in this draft. If I'm picking 28 to 32, somewhere in there, yeah, I think I could take Michael Penix in this draft just because, you know, he's got the most liveliest arm. And you can explain to your host what that means, Brock. Like, he's got an arm that it just look like when the ball comes off, it's different. Like, it's different. And he can, you know, maybe he needs to work on some of the touch throws, that deep square in where he's got to layer it over that linebacker and in between that corner and that safety. Like, maybe he needs to work on that. But guess what? I mean, as long as he's got that fastball, I think we can work with the other things. I just don't know how you're going to judge two ACLs and two shoulder injuries. Do you say, well, he's a quarterback, and eventually they're all going to get hurt, because I truly believe that. Like, it's not if you get hurt, it's when. Everybody gets hurt in this league. So do you say he's already had his injuries and he's going to be clean for a while because he's been clean for a couple of years, or do you say he's injury-prone and his body just can't take it? I don't know how you look at it, but if we're just looking at the tape and the arm, he deserves to be a first-round pick.
Who do you think's, you know, as you look at this, and we're trying to figure out here in Seattle, it's the first time we've had a draft without Pete Carroll in forever. We're trying to figure out what fits what Mike Macdonald wants to do based on what he's done at Michigan and maybe what he's done in Baltimore. Is there a player that you think fits his past, his scheme, et cetera?
Well, if you look at what they've done in Baltimore and you kind of look at what they've done in Seattle, like they like versatility, right? Like if you just think about the Baltimore defense, you think about a bunch of guys that are long and athletic, the 6'4 to 6'5, 250 to 260, the linebackers that are 225, 230 that can run. They took Kyle Hamilton, and he's a big athlete, and they made a position for him. And then if you think about what Pete has done and what Snyder has done up in Seattle, I mean, think about a guy like Bruce Irvin. You know, may not have fit a lot of places, but he fit really well up there. You think about Bennett. Think about Cam Chancellor, Browner, like some of the guys that they're just really athletic. They're big football players. They're athletic, not overly, like when I say big, they're not, 260 backers or 310-pound defensive tackles. But what they are big athletes. And I think it wouldn't surprise me when you start looking at some of the guys that are athletic in this draft, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like a guy like a Chop Robinson comes to mind. I mean, Chop 6'4", 240, ran 4'4". I mean, that sounds like a Snyder guy, doesn't it? Like, I mean, guy that could come in there, he could do some things. He definitely would fit in Baltimore, when you look at how Baltimore wants to get after it. So it's going to depend. I do think this is going to be a defensive draft. If it's not an offensive lineman, I do think they're going defense in Seattle. But this draft's going to be fascinating, guys, because you don't know, after the top. To me, I think it's going quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And then what does Arizona do at 4? Do they stick and pick and take Neighbors or Harrison Jr., or do they trade out? Does Minnesota come up package 11 and 23 and some other things and come up to 4 and take J.J. McCarthy, who, oh, by the way, Brock, I don't see it. And maybe you can tell me I'm wrong, but I don't see it. And we can make all these Brock excuses about – like we can talk about it's Harbaugh and the style he wants to play. Here's what I know. It would be hard for me to pick J.J. McCarthy at 4. And I haven't seen him do what I've seen the other three guys do. And here's what I mean by that, Brock. And then I'd love to hear your answer. Mm-hmm. I saw the other three guys at one point in their tenure in college be given the ball and go get it done. And they got it done when it didn't matter what the defense did. It didn't matter who was around them. They went out and they got it done. Now, for Caleb and Drake, it may have been in 22. For Jaden, it was in 23. I haven't seen J.J. do it, and that's the issue for me. Like I've seen, it's kind of like Bigfoot. Like I heard about him, and I saw him here and there. I saw some shadows, but I haven't seen him consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would argue go watch the Ohio State games, and yes, it's a running defense, right? So you've got to put those glasses on and go, this is what they're asked to do. This is his team. It's the way it's built. It's running defense. But on third downs in the fourth quarters, dude was nails. Needed a drive against Alabama in the fourth quarter, drove him down to win. Needed a third down conversion when everybody's sphincter for Michigan was getting really tight in the national title game in the third quarter, scrambles for 25 yards. And just, it's not volume. He doesn't have the volume, to your point, but there's those big, big moments. And the dude just elevated Jim Harbaugh and elevated Michigan, along with all of his buddies, to a national championship, which people don't understand this, but Bo never won one. Right? Bo Schembechler they'd won one in like 70 years until they got it done right this year. So, yeah, it's a great debate. It's going to make for a fascinating draft. Just answer me this one last question. I'm just going to give you just flat out stats. Okay, we got two combatants going at it a week from today.
Stop.
One is 5'10", 195 pounds. Weight will fluctuate a little bit. He'll get down lean and mean, and then it'll fluctuate back up. He was a football player until he decided smoking cigarettes was more important at Pomona than being a football player. And on the other side, we have a track star from high school. Her coach called her a Tarana bird. She's 6 foot. She's got 10.5-inch hands. She runs every day with her dog. Those two are going at it.
I
one
ran
week
distance,
from today.
Though. I didn't sprint.
Those two are going at it in a 220-meter race. Who you got?
6 feet. Wow. I mean, that sounds like, and don't take this the wrong way, but from an athletic standpoint, that sounds like an animal.
I'm 5'10", by the way.
Okay. I'm taking I'm taking the more athletic person, so I'm taking her.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Well, let's see where that goes. All right. Well, so then now that I know that's what you say, I'm going to obviously discount your answer to this final question. But fine. If you are sitting at 16 and you have your choice between Michael Penix, Jared Verse, Troy Fautanu, Lautu, Byron Murphy, and Chop Robinson, just because you mentioned his name, who are you taking?
Oh, at 16, I think the value is there for Lautu. At 16, I'd take him. If my defensive line coach could sway me into taking Murphy, I'd listen. I'd be okay. But if he says, "Hey, I want Lautu," I'm taking Lautu because I think the production and the impact will be immediate. It won't be I need to teach him how to play, because I think he's ready to play now. He's got to get a little stronger and all that good stuff. But again, all these guys are prospects. They're not ready to come in and be all pro players. They have tools, and it's going to be up to their coaches to refine those tools. I think Lautu has as good of tools as we've seen as an edge rusher coming into this league.
Pretty cool. Booger, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming by the show. Enjoy the draft week from today. We can't wait. Thank you so much.
Anytime, guys, take it easy. Brock, at some point, Brock, I just want to see a video of you moving swiftly. That's
okay.
All I want to see.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. Maybe this UFL. Maybe yeah. I'll have that chance in the next month and a half. So I will let you know. Thanks, right, Boog.
There
appreciate
you go. There
you
goes Booger McFarland. Great stuff from ESPN, of course. And he's banging the table for Lautu. I knew
Dave
that was going to be his answer. Huh?
Yeah, he and Dave Wyman, man. God, former players. There's something about that.
I know, but don't the medicals concern you?
You know what's fascinating? You know what
he
I was just thinking about?
Retired.
No, the university medically retired him.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
And then he probably, and I don't know what that neck surgery was, but typically those are fusions or of something of that extent. I know.
He's gone down this road.
You know what would be fascinating is you listen to Booger right there talk about Baltimore and Seattle, McDonald, what they look for and everything else. Wouldn't it be fascinating to know where Mike McDonald had, I don't know, Derek Hall, where he had Boye Mafe, where he had Daryl Taylor. I mean, those are your edge guys, and those were all projects. Those were all guys coming out of school that had room to grow versus, and Chop Robinson probably fits into that camp. Great skill set, but not the level of production that a Lautu has, right? Or a Jared Verse has. I think there's a little more background with both of those guys. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man, the more you listen to people, the more we talk about it. A week from Thursday, it's going to be fascinating.
Very, very interesting. That is for darn sure. All right, well, good thing we got another draft profile coming up next. We're coming down the final stretch. Who does Brock have for us today? Find out next on Brock and Salk.